Well, the whole thing about the supernatural part was, there was some of it that I had a vague idea of what I wanted to do, but man, that just created itself. The whole idea of the dream sequencing and I get, I guess you would have to call it, I don't know, maybe time travel through dreams or that type of thing. I don't know, but that was not necessarily planned.
My guest today is Carol Allison, author of Cochetope Dreams, a novel that bridges Western history and rugged living with a haunting mystery tied to the Circle J Ranch. Carol's a graduate in history from the University of Colorado, where he won the Department of History's undergraduate writing competition 2 years in a row. He spent over 40 years in careers in law enforcement and in public safety technology. His first novel, Cochetope Dreams, was born out of the history of his wife's pioneer family in the San Luis Valley and a deep love of the Colorado High Country. Carol currently resides in Western Colorado.
So I have a copy of Cochetope Dreams right here, and it's actually a signed version. I think it was signed before it came into my hands. And then you and I met and talked about this, and that's a different story. Maybe we'll get into that at the end of this book or at the end of this interview. But this is it's a great story. It highlights Western Colorado and mountain living and ranch living, and then it has a sort of a ghost story to it as well. So highly recommend. But for listeners who are not familiar with this book or who have not read it, maybe you could just start with a quick overview of the story in a nutshell. What is it about?
Well, it's kind of interesting because I've tried to figure out for myself what if there's a genre for this story. And it's kind of, from that standpoint, if you try and put it into a box, it's kind of difficult to do for many, in many ways. It's got some romantic characteristics. It's got some supernatural characteristics. It's got historical characteristics. But not to be too much of a cliche, I just think it's about life and what the cycles of life, everything from relationships starting and ending that cause changes in a person's life to a mother's love, a willingness to put yourself at risk in situations that are unfamiliar. It's also, what I tried to do is not to just to make it a story about people living. And what it came into was battles with nature, and then a bridge, if you will, across time and generations that are linked to a specific place. And at the basis, it's a single mother who decides that she needs to leave the city life, and she has an opportunity to accept a position as a caretaker on essentially a working guest ranch, if you will, in the Cocheteau area of southern Colorado. That's basically between Sawatch and Gunnison, if you will. And it's a story based upon her experiences bringing her son into an environment that's totally alien to them both. But finding that they have the resolve and the resilience to adapt and to succeed in an environment that would be outside of the normal experience of day-to-day life of most people in the world today. So it's a willingness to put yourself out there to risk, to risk failure, and through risk achieve success and rebuild lives. And then at the same time, there's this, you know, there's an overlay of a juxtaposition based upon the ranch that she's at to the original founders of the ranch and a tie, spiritual, if you will, between her and the original ranch wife. And the fact that they both had sons, and the fact that they both found themselves in positions of maybe losing their sons, and finding the strength and the resolve to, you know, battle through that and to continue on. So at the end of the day, like I said, it's not political. It's not a classic romance. It's not a classic supernatural story. It's not science fiction. It's just about life, and a life in a specific part of Colorado that's probably one of the most spectacular places in the state.
Yeah, it's timeless in that sense. And also, as you just mentioned, that area, the setting plays a huge role in this. The time, the place, you know, the high country of Colorado, ranch life. So that as you look at two different times in your book, something that occurred to me is the life is, it's very similar. I mean, even though it's 100 years apart,
right,
it actually hasn't changed all that much.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, there's some, you know, of course, the present day family has a few more modern conveniences, if you will. But when you get that far back into the high country, you're very limited. You know, I guess right today you'd have satellite communication and you could achieve connection through satellite communication. But satellite communication, even today in that area, doesn't mean that you don't have to drive an hour and a half to get to a grocery store. And that you don't, that your reliance on infrastructure like electricity and that type of thing is a risk. I mean, it's even today, the, you know, the utilities, when you go way back into the back country, are limited and iffy, if you will, from time to time. So it wouldn't be unusual at all for a big storm just to shut everything down.
Yeah. As someone who lives in the high country in a pretty rural area, the detail, I noticed all these little details that you included. It was obvious that you've lived that life. You know that life. There are all these little, just these little things around, you know, having a generator and having, you know, not just four-wheel drive, but all, chopping wood and doing all these little things. Even the details of the house, the farmhouse or the ranch house that you described, you know, to somebody who lives in this area, it's like, you can just tick them off. It's very familiar. Can you talk a little bit about what introduced you to that area? You're talking about Highway 114, which, as you said, runs from Gunnison down to Sawatch. It's high country. You go over the Continental Divide at least at one point. Mm-hmm. You just have these big, I guess they're kind of mountain bowls, or these vast areas, stretches of wilderness, and you can see for miles and miles and miles. It's a unique and beautiful area. What drew you to that area? What's your story around that?
We became familiar with that area when my wife's parents, her father in specifics, his family is a pioneer family. that her grandmother literally came to Colorado in a covered wagon from Missouri at the turn of the 20th century in the early 1900s. And they settled in Crestone. Crestone, Colorado is still a very, very small community located at the base of Crestone Peak. And there's literally one way in and one way out to that town. It's just north of the sand dunes. So it's a pretty spectacular area itself. And when her father and mother, when they retired, they moved back to Cresta. And at that time, we lived at on the Continental Divide above Boulder, above the town of Nederland, if you're familiar with that area. And when we became empty nesters, we decided to move over to the Western Slope, and we lived in Grand Junction at that time. And so, in order to get to Crestone from Grand Junction, you took Highway 50 to Gunnison, you know, through Montrose, and then you took Highway 114 from Gunnison to Sawatch. And so we became, you know, very familiar with going through that territory on all the times that we traveled back and forth, to visit family and that type of thing. And then, and so we just fell in love with it. The little Cochetough Canyon where the creek comes through, as you're coming out of Gunnison, and the first 18 miles of 114 goes through the Cochetough Canyon. It's just this magical place. It's really hard to describe it. You just have to see it. And then all of a sudden you come out of the canyon going south, and you're just into this panorama of, as you, you're good description, big bowls of valley and open space. And then to the south, you have the La Garita Range of mountains that you can see as you're moving along. And then, the other cool thing about it is that is the old Spanish Trail. There is Highway 14 goes over Cochetough Pass, but there is an old Cochetough Pass that is south of the highway, and you can still go over. It's a seasonal road, but we just spent a lot of time back in there, just looking around and exploring and that type of thing. And just to this day, it remains, I think, our favorite spot in Colorado.
It's certainly one of, if not my favorite drive. Before I was familiar with your book, there were two aspects of the drive that I thought were most beautiful. One is that Cochetough Canyon, and the second is that view south, which I believe you've chosen as your ebook cover. I know exactly where that is. It's just, yep, you can see miles and miles to the south, and yep, the mountains, the jagged peaks rising in the distance. It's just, it's an awesome view.
Yeah.
So what a cool area to locate your story. What was your impetus to write this story? I mean, you have a story writing background, which we can get into, but this story in particular, what got you going on it, and what gave you the idea for weaving the Western Colorado history and landscape together with a more of an ethereal approach?
It's really kind of simple. It's almost too simple. Because we're kicking around the idea, and I've had some experience in writing from time to time, and as many writers have, I do have a first novel, if you will, that's sitting in a box of books, or in a box from way back. And but I always wanted to do something else, and then I think it was 2004. My wife and I had the opportunity to take a year off, and we looked at each other and said, well, do we do this now, or do it when we're too old and don't care? So, we kind of stepped out on a limb. We took a year off, and she's a very accomplished sculptor, worked with bronze. And so we decided that we'd devote a year. I would write and she would sculpt. And then we were kicking around ideas and stuff. She just said, why don't you just write a book about a lady that talks to ghosts? And, you know, and I started, and it, I mean, it was that the kernel of the story was that simple. It's just, that's just what she said. And by that point in time, we had already become very familiar with the Cochetope and that whole area down there. And, and then her family's history, in the San Luis Valley, the pioneer history that is brought to bear, the fact that in Crestone, there's the Baca Grande land grant that I think is a 15 or 1600s Spanish land grant, that was turned into the Baca Ranch, that is outside of Crestone, and was a working ranch for decades, that her father worked on when he was a boy. It just all came together. I mean, it just, you know, put it in the, you know, and we were coming out of the high country. You know, we had spent 10 years up on at above nearly 10,000 feet. You know, so a lot of what you're talking about knowing, you know, how to live and how to survive and what you experience in the Colorado high country, we had a, you know, strong background in that. And it just all came together as far as, you know, I just decided to, you know, take it from the standpoint of a female perspective, which is a little unusual, I think, but it worked.
Yeah, it certainly did. So this is interesting. The writing process, a novel is a huge, huge undertaking. And maybe, you know, folks don't realize that until after they get done with it. And maybe that's why second novels are so hard to get to, because you're actually aware of what a challenge it is to write it. It's like, how did I do that? But what was your process in moving forward? Did you just kind of feel in a good place and you just started writing, or did you have starts and stops, or did you plan out your novel in advance, or did you just start writing and let that process take you forward?
Yeah, I know that, you know, when you go to your literary classes, your writing classes in college and stuff like that, you know, there's all these fundamentals that you go through. You know, you got to go through character development. You got to do outlines. You got to do plot construction, and you know, all of these mechanical parts. You know, I hate to say it, but I didn't do any of that. Not to the extent that, you know, you would think that somebody would, but the main thing I did is I got the kernel of the story. I started, you know, I started pulling together some research on the area, and then what I did was, is I made it in for that year. I made it into that was my work for that year. So every morning I got up. Well, I did it like a regular job, Monday through Friday. So you get up on Monday morning, you have breakfast, you know, then what I did was I went into the office and I shut the door and I wrote for at least 4 to 6 hours a day, and did it Monday through Friday. But you know, the weird thing was that as soon as I got the first few paragraphs down, it just came. The story just came. You know, I had an idea of the characters and who they were going to be, and you know, names and some, you know, biological information or biographical information and that type of thing. But the story just kind of made itself. And that was, I think that was probably the fun part, is that you just, as long as you'd make yourself sit down and write, the story would be there for you.
It's kind of a channeling process, isn't it? It's
Yeah,
it kind of
it felt like it.
unfolds.
Yeah.
Yeah, were there aspects of the story that emerged that surprised you, or were not? Did you go in a direction or feel yourself pulled in a certain way that you didn't intend at the outset?
Oh, the whole thing about the supernatural part was, I mean, there was some of it that I had a vague idea of what I wanted to do, but man, that just created itself. You know, the whole idea of the dream sequencing, and I get, you know, I guess you would have to call it, I don't know, maybe time travel through dreams or that type of thing. I don't know, but that was not necessarily planned. I mean, it just came out as the story grew, you know, all of that came together, and it just became a flow of ideas, and was a lot of fun, actually.
So you have a background in Western history and you have a background in writing. Did you have any personal experiences related to the mystical or the ethereal that you drew on, or was that just totally came out during the writing process?
I think for the most part, it came out through the writing process. You know, I think I've always considered myself to have a spiritual side, if you will. You know, I've always enjoyed mysticism, if you know, that type of thing. And so, you know, the concepts of spirituality and the existence on in different dimensions, and life after death, and you know, all those things that make up a that kind of a story, they were something that were I felt came naturally. Yeah.
Did you write the entire book and edit it later, or did you have someone edit it, or did you edit chapter by chapter? I'm curious how it sounds like the entire process was pretty fluid and pretty fast. Were there any moments of, writer's block or self-doubt or course correction or anything like that, or did it just take off on its own?
It did take off on its own, but you know, there were times, and you know, I did try and go back and edit as I went. And then, you know, I had, you know, my wife was helpful in doing some proofreading and that type of thing. When I was accepted by the publisher, then I worked with an editor. But that was after the manuscript had been finished. And we went, but then I went back through with an editor and did a formal editing at that point. But you know, as I went along, it was a lot of the stopping and starting had to do with fact checking and doing research and going, wait a minute, maybe I don't know all that much about how you do use pack mules, right? Or yeah, there really was an ice palace in Leadville, you know, at the turn of the century, of the 20th century, and just in going back and just bringing in historical detail about, you know, Otto Mears, and he's the one that went into the San Luis Valley and built the first roads and railroads, and you know, the historical context. You know, those are the types of things where I would maybe stop for a few days and go out and, you know, grab research and that type of thing. And oddly enough, you know, we've driven through that area. And we, you know, we knew it from that standpoint. But when I was deciding where to put it, I was basically using topo maps, extensive topo maps, and going, well, that looks like a nice place. Maybe we just stick it there. Or, oh, there's Sanderson Park over there. Well, you could probably hunt elk over in Sanderson Park. And, but that then, but that then led to really some really interesting things, which we can probably just go ahead and get into, because it was, I think, maybe, I don't know, not even a year after the book was published, I get this call from my publisher, and they said, look, we got this guy down in Texas, and he's just hammering us to get in touch with you. And we don't give out your, we're not going to give out your phone number and stuff, but here's his phone number. And he really wants you to call him because he wants to know when you were at his ranch. So I called the gentleman down in Texas, and we talked. And he, literally, he his first questions were, "When did you come? When were you at the ranch?" He said, "There's no other way you could have written this unless you had been there." And I had to admit, well, no, I had never been to your ranch, and he, but he, and it was really interesting, because he was at, he said, you had to be there. You had to have been inside the ranch house to write this book. I mean, that's evidently how, for however possible, that's how close it came to his ranch as far as the descriptions. And so you mentioned the pictures, and you mentioned the picture that's on the cover of the ebook, the cover photo of the ebook. Well, when I decided to do the original hardcover, or the that was done, was the picture was picked by the publisher. And I always thought it was kind of, I always knew it was up by Long's Peak. It's not in the Cocheteau. So I said, well, if I'm going to do this, if we're going to publish this ebook, then maybe we should, let's see if we can find a picture. And so I was looking around online, and I found that the Cocheteau Dome Ranch, which is the ranch that you see, that's that picture that you're referring to. And it's the little ranch as you're coming out of the canyon, on the south side of the road. There's a ranch down there, before you come to Cocheteau Pass. And it was for sale. And it was for sale by the Mir Ranch Group, and their real estate company that handles big ranches. And they had all these pictures on their website of the ranch during, during the sale. And I just called them, and I said, look, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. Is there any way that maybe I could get permission to use one of your pictures in the, for the cover of the ebook? And the gal, the lady I talked to, she said, well, it's maybe, I don't know. Let me talk to the person that took the photos, and we'll get back to you. And so a couple of days later, I got a phone call from a gentleman by the name of Daniel Carter, who's a senior vice president with the Mirror Group. And he handled that sale, and he was gracious enough to, he was gracious enough to let me use the pictures, but he also said, well, I just also bought a ranch in that area. I mean, he handled the sale of the Cocheteau Dome Ranch, but he also had purchased a ranch himself. And he said, we know you. I said, what do you mean you know? He said, yeah, we know, because when we bought the ranch and we went in, there's a bookshelf, and your book was on the bookshelf. in the ranch house. And it was like, wait a minute, did you buy the ranch from a gentleman in Texas who used to run it as a guest ranch? And he goes, yep, same ranch. And he said, we've read the book, and my ranch foreman and I were always going around saying, oh, I wonder if that's where they were hunting. I was over there. And then he sends me pictures of the ranch. And he sent me the picture of the moss rock fireplace with the rocking chair in front of the fireplace. It's like, well, okay. So, I don't know what's going on here, but something's going on here. So
Yeah, for
that was part of why I, you know, when I, you know, we decided, we just, I just decided after, I'd really like to write something else. And I just decided that maybe ebooks really weren't a big thing when when the first publication were out. They were just rudimentary at best, I think, if at all. And then I started looking into it, and it looked like it was going to be a fairly straightforward, simple process, and to go ahead and turn it into an ebook. And so, that's what we decided to do that. And then, the whole thing about finding the picture for the cover just turned out to be just really interesting.
That's wild, the amount of synchronicity involved in the whole process. And for those who haven't read the book, the fireplace and the rocking chair, those play up an important piece. It's over and over again throughout the
Yeah.
story. That's where worlds overlap.
That's where worlds overlap. Yeah.
Writing is such an interesting process. Especially there's that channeling aspect, and it sounds like you tapped into all kinds of things, and the people that you met, and all these that compliment that I think it would be a huge compliment by that individual who said you've been at my ranch. I mean, that's the ultimate testament to how authentic your story is.
Yeah, I was, it was very gratifying to know that, that I had touched, that close to reality, if you will. And that just underscored the fact that I was tapped into the right story at the right time, at the right place. So.
Yeah. Well, again, it seems like the story, it flowed. It was not a di maybe a difficult process. I'm sure you had your challenges, but I am curious, since you set apart a year of your time just to write this story, and that was your goal, did you feel pressure around that? Did you feel like, having that deadline and feeling like, well, if I don't get this done at the end of a year, I haven't spent my time well. Did any of that enter your mind?
Sure, because we knew that, at some point in time we were going to have to go back to work. After, I mean, that, that's kind of interesting because, that was probably the one of the most productive years we've had in our lifetime. And but I really did want to get it accomplished during that time period. And so there was some deadline pressure, if you will, but I was able to, get the first drafts of the complete manuscript done in about 6 months. And so after that, there was some fine tuning and that type of thing. And then there was the whole process of trying to find a publisher and going through that process. But yeah, there was a always kind of in the back of your mind that you had a finite period to work with and just go get it done. And that's why I put myself in that position of, okay, this is going to be a job and we're going to treat it like a job. And it worked out.
It seems like one of the ruts that historical fiction writers get into frequently is spending too much time on research. The research just never ends because, you know, the attention to details, you want to make sure everything's accurate, and the research can be a lot of fun too.
Yeah.
Did you find, was it difficult to balance that, or did the research just unfold as you went?
Well, I wasn't trying to be James Michener. So, what I found was the research unfolded as I went, because the research was very targeted. It was very focused. So I was researching very specific topics, if you will, at any given time throughout the story. So it could have been just the, you know, it could have been just the going out and making sure that there were hunting tents that you could put up and that you could put wood stoves in, and you know, that, you know, the whole concept of the hunting camp, and you know, and just making sure that was real. What I wanted to, you know, what I wanted to do was make sure that you know, that if I did talk about something, that it had a, that it was based in reality, that, you know, that I wasn't just pulling something out of the air and throwing it into the story. I wanted it to be, to have a basis in historical research. So I didn't spend huge amount of time on, you know, broad historical research. Fairly well read in Western history, and so it was more just, let's get an answer to this question and make sure that we're right about how we describe it.
There are a lot of people that would like to write a book, or it's on their, you know, their bucket list, or the things that they want to accomplish in their lives. But as we said at the beginning of this conversation, it can feel overwhelming even to get started. Do you have any advice for aspiring writers, or even if not advice, just something that you learned about yourself or about writing through this process that, you know, maybe was new to you, or might give someone a leg up if they're trying to, you know, express their creativity in writing?
Put your hand on the keys and start. I mean, that's, and you can sit around and think about it all day long. And, you know, I remember that first way back, novel that I did, that I wrote, that never really got anywhere. You know, it was just a matter of sitting down and writing. And then for this one, for Cochitoe Dreams, like I said, once you got the first few pages going, it came. And, you know, I know I'm going to fly in the face of all the literary professors around, but I did, you know, trying to do all the prep work, trying to write out, you know, to front to back, outline it, character development. I mean, I'm not saying that's not good. If you need that kind of structure, then do that. But at the end of the day, you've got to put your fingers on the keyboard, and you got to pick up a pen and a yellow pad, and you just have to start writing, you know. And you know, I can say that, and I did that. But as you notice, I haven't done it again. And that's something that I really do want to do again. And, you know, I still think I've got stories that can be told. And now I've got, you know, I've got time to do that. And so we'll see what happens. But yeah, my best advice is, if you want to write it, just write it.
Yeah, I think that resonates. There's probably different strokes for different folks. Maybe some people need to outline the whole book. A lot of people will recommend starting at the end and working your way backwards. I think that for some writers, the process of writing a story is the adventure. And so, you know, if you try, at least in my own experience, if I try to game it all the way out, it's kind of like the adventure, the fun part is almost over. I think the exploration and seeing what comes to light, that is the fun part. And that's what keeps that motivation up there.
Yeah. Well, in my first attempt, I could never get the ending right. I could never nail the ending for whatever reason. It just drove me crazy. You know, I was working with editors at that time, and you know, it was very frustrating, and it got very frustrating to the point where I did set it aside. But with Cogito Dreams, the ending was a logical conclusion of the whole story. I mean, it was just there. I didn't have to think about it. It's just where the story ended. And it was such a different experience in the two attempts that, it's hard to explain without having experienced it, without having gone through that, with that, you know, going through that process and then reaching a conclusion where you just sit back and you go, the end, and it's all tied up and it's, you know, the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Our connection, just to get into this very briefly, is interesting as well. Having driven that route many, many times and loved it, I actually got connected with your book. My daughter was visiting on a field trip, Fort Uncompahgre down in Delta, and she bought her dad a book. And she had no idea that this was, I mean, that she had driven that route. I mean, there was no connection there, no particular interest in history. And I asked her why she picked this one. She said, well, Dad, it seemed like the least boring book. So we got into this and I started reading it, and it's the whole area, as we've already discussed, that, you know, that I was familiar with. And there was just, it just really connected. It's a fantastic story. It's a clean story. It's a good feeling story. Anybody, I think, who is interested in Western living, Western history, ghost stories, I think will really enjoy this. And I have to say, I've shared this with a number of people, some family members, and one person in particular, and I won't say who it is, but this person is very bright, has dyslexia, has maybe finished one book in the last 10 or 15 years until reading Cogitope Dreams. And just absolutely loved it. So I think that says a lot, because you express the story clearly. It has an emotional connection. But the language that you use is really accessible. I mean, it's just, you know, you don't have to work your way through it. It just comes naturally. So big kudos to you for that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I guess we'll wrap up by just highlighting the fact that you recently re-released this book as an ebook on Amazon. Is there anything you want to share around that?
It's definitely something new and different for me. I'm hoping that we can maybe get a little more traction and put it in a format that will be more reachable by today's reader. You know, I'm kind of old school. I like to hold the book, and I have a very tactile experience between holding the book and reading the book and absorbing what I'm reading. I know that in our current world, most people are more comfortable reading something online. And for good or ill, I mean, that's the way that technology is taking us. And I really like to, you know, have people be able to access the story and in any way possible. And so hopefully by releasing the ebook, that will give the ability for people that enjoy reading online and enjoy the ebook format, you know, to access it and have fun with it.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you have that new cover that you talked about earlier on that ebook. So
Yes.
if somebody just wants to visit Amazon and just take a look at that cover, that's that southward looking view from Highway 114 that just says, you know, a picture says 1,000 words that really
Yeah,
conveys the setting.
that is the Cocteau Dome that you're looking at. That's and the Cocteau Dome in and of itself is a whole other story.
Well, is there any contact information that you want to offer if somebody is listening to this and wants to get in touch with you? I'll put the Amazon link for the book in the show notes, but is there anything else that you wanted to share around that?
I don't think so at this time. If you, there's a author's page on Amazon, and I'm going to put some contact information there, so that will be available.
I just thank you for coming on and sharing this. You and I have met in person. We've talked about this. Just your journey in writing this book is so interesting, and the story is so interesting that it's just really fun to share this. And I think anybody, again, who's interested in these issues is really going to enjoy it. And I hope that you get around to writing that next story so that we can enjoy that as well.
I'm going to try. It's my goal right now.
All right. Well, we'll look for it. Thank you very much, Kel. Really appreciate your time today.
Andrew, thank you. It's been fun.